And welcome to The Morning Magazine, your Front Range morning news program here on Community Radio KGNU. It is Friday, April 12th. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hanalee Myers. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear from Daisy Khan, who heads up WISE. That's the Women's Islamic Initiative in Spirituality and Equality. She'll lead a town hall discussion this evening at the Islamic Center of Boulder on how knowledge can end extremism. Then, tomorrow is Record Store Day, which is a day that brings together fans, artists, and thousands of independent record stores across the world to celebrate the culture of independently owned record stores. We'll hear from a local iconic record store, Bart's, on what makes this day special. To round out this morning's show, we'll hear about the Blind Cafe, an award-winning positive social impact event that happens tonight and tomorrow at the Dairy Art Center in Boulder, which invites people to participate in a positive social impact discussion, a sensory tasting menu, and experience live music, all in complete darkness. At 8:30 on Connections, KGNU's Kathy Partridge hosts the show honoring the 20th anniversary of the Columbine High School mass shooting. She'll be speaking with Bob Davidson, National Chair of Episcopal Peace Fellowship, as well as Emily Arbery and Rachel Hill, students active in March for Our Lives. As always, you'll be invited to call in and join that conversation on Connections at 8:30. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, it's time for your local headlines. Here's Steve Miller.
Last month, Denver's water bid to bypass a Boulder County land use review of plans to expand Gross Reservoir was denied by the county commissioners. And Thursday, Denver Water filed a lawsuit in Boulder District Court to overturn that decision and the county commissioners' unanimous vote to review the dam expansion. The Daily Camera reports Denver Water claims they are filing the suit because the commissioner's vote went beyond the county's jurisdiction. Six environmental groups filed their own lawsuit against the project. If approved, the Gross Reservoir expansion would be the largest contrition project in Boulder County's history. And in other local water conflicts, attorneys for the city of Thornton say they will sue Larimer County over the recent decision to reject a pipeline that would send water from the Poudre River to the growing community north of Denver. Maeve Conran has more.
The contested $423 million pipeline would have moved millions of gallons of water from the Poudre across the northern edge of Fort Collins to Interstate 25 before turning south towards Thornton, which owns the rights to the water. Larimer County commissioners rejected the pipeline in February, acknowledging that while Thornton owned the water rights, the city hadn't given proper consideration on how to move the water. Now attorneys for Thornton say they're suing. Instead of a pipeline, Larimer County commissioners say that water could be sent down the Poudre River through the city of Fort Collins, avoiding a major excavation project and keeping water in the river for longer stretches. Gary Wachner of Save the Poudre, a group which opposes diverting water out of the river, said in a statement on Thursday that Save the Poudre will now intervene in the lawsuit to defend Larimer County and its citizens to fight Thornton every step of the way. For KGNU, I'm Maeve Conran.
State and federal agencies have reported that harmful nitrogen pollution is drifting onto fragile, high-elevation ecosystems in Rocky Mountain National Park. Colorado Politics reports that the nitrogen pollution was 38% higher than the 2017 target level. Wind, rain, and snow is carrying the nitrogen into the park and is primarily coming from vehicles, power plants, livestock, agricultural fertilizers, and oil and gas operations. Increased nitrogen reduces biodiversity, worsens the risk of insect and disease outbreaks, and makes it harder for ecosystems to respond to climate change. But the report recommends against activating a contingency plan to reduce pollution, saying that the levels will probably begin to decline because of tougher state and federal rules for vehicle emissions, planned retirements of coal-fired power plants, along with other steps. Colorado State University has developed a nitrogen reduction system to warn farmers, ranchers, wastewater treatment plants, and others to avoid large releases on days when weather conditions would carry pollution to the park. Students at CU Boulder are planning protests over the selection of Mark Kennedy as the sole finalist in the search for a new president of the University of Colorado system. Lauren Antonoff has more.
Kennedy is the president of the University of North Dakota in Grand Forks. Prior to that, from 2001 to 2007, he served as a Republican congressman representing the state of Minnesota. In 2006, he ran for the U.S. Senate, losing the election to Amy Klobuchar. At a special meeting this week, the CU Board of Regents unanimously selected Kennedy as the sole finalist in the university's search for a new president, replacing current leader Bruce Benson. Just a day later, student organizations at CU began speaking out, demanding more transparency in the selection process and criticizing Kennedy's voting record in Congress, which includes votes against gay marriage and votes in favor of restricting abortion access. The Daily Camera reports that the Committee on Rights and Compensation, a CU Boulder group advocating for graduate students, are planning a rally for noon on Monday, April 15th, on Norlin Quad. Another demonstration is planned on April 26th, when Kennedy is expected to visit the campus. For KGNU, I'm Lauren Antonoff.
And continuing coverage of that story, Thursday, CU Regents responding to outcry over Kenny's selection told the Daily Camera they felt forced to rush the announcement of Kennedy as the presidential finalist by a North Dakota newspaper article. One regent said the former Republican congressman's background hadn't been sufficiently reviewed, and they need to press and the public to do the job in vetting Kennedy over the next 2 weeks prior to their vote to hire him for the job. And in today's weather, current temperatures in Boulder 27, Denver 23, Fort Collins 26. Today mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of snow showers, high in the low 40s. And then tonight the chance of snow showers continues with a low of 25. Saturday, 30% chance with a high of 45 degrees. And then Sunday, mostly sunny, temperatures creeping back up into the 60s. And I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Earlier this week, the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing on the rise of white nationalism. Data shows a surge in fatal attacks by far-right extremists in recent years, and yet very often the narrative around extremist ideology focuses on extremism in the Muslim community. That's one of the misconceptions that Daisy Khan tries to dispel through her work at WISE, that's the Women's Islamic Initiative in Spirituality and Equality. She'll be leading a town hall meeting this evening at the Boulder Islamic Center called Knowledge Ends Extremism. WISE is an organization that seeks to elevate the voices of Muslim women and to bring equality.
The common misconception about Muslim women is that we are second-class citizens, that we are suppressed and oppressed. And it's a very narrow definition of who we really are and what we represent. Although these things do happen, and no one is denying that, there are women who are being oppressed and suppressed in parts of the world, but that's not the reality of Muslim women. There's about 750 million Muslim women around the globe. And we have 10 Muslim women who have been heads of state now. And so that reality just does not match with the perception that people have. And so we have to fight that perception here in the United States. It seeps into the way people view us here in the U.S. The reality is Muslim women are incredibly resourceful. They do a lion's share of work in this community. They are civically engaged. They are running civil society organizations. They're highly educated. They're professionals. And are huge contributors to society. So one of the things that we do is we change that perception by not only showcasing women of today, but also showcasing women of yesterday, of the past, who they were, and how they had contributed to our civilizations over time. And of course, we don't have time to go into all the details. It's all on our website, wisemuslimwomen.org. We have profiles of Muslim women there. Anybody can go look at it and to see how women have contributed from literally from the earliest of times when they were standing next to the Prophet and were fighting by his side, along with women, you know, who have been sultanas and who have been fierce leaders and who have been jurists, and we've contributed. But that does not come across because the whole perception is about, you know, the narrative is shaped by what's happening to a particular woman in a particular society, and that's what dominates the press and shapes the perception.
Well, this event that's happening on Friday evening at the Islamic Center of Boulder, it is about knowledge and how that can end extremism. When we talk about extremism, or when Islam is discussed very often, particularly in the US mainstream press, and you hear the words extremism, there's rarely that term used when we're seeing the rise of white nationalism. And the label terrorism is very often not attributed to white nationalist acts of violence. Instead, those perpetrators are often sort of treated as lone wolves as opposed to being part of a movement.
Yeah, so I think it's really important for people to, you know, understand that, yes, extremism existed within Muslim communities, and we were confronted by it more than anybody else. And we have a lot of experience with this issue now. And in the sense that we have been dealing with it for the last 15 years, and, you know, the enemy from within. And we did not know, we didn't have the knowledge or the know-how to step up and to confront this issue. And why I'm raising the alarm bell right now is because we're seeing the same trend with white supremacy. We're seeing the same motivations. We're seeing the same tactics. We're seeing the same marketing tools that they're using. And we're seeing how they're shaping their ideology. It's so similar to the ideology of, let's say, ISIS. And they're marketing it in the same way. So, you know, first of all extremists believe in the same things, us versus them. You know, us is that small little in-group, and them is the out-group. And it can be, the in-group can be anybody. It can be Muslim versus the West, or it can be white people versus everybody else, the, you know, the Muslims, the Jews, the immigrants, and everyone, all other minorities. They all have this in common, that there's pessimism about the state of the world, that, you know, the world is coming to an end and we have to do something, and violence is the only way for us to get what, you know, to go back to where we were. They all want to maintain purity. Our group is the most pure. They are rejectionists. They're fanatical. They also want to rewrite history. And you see this with white nationalism, who are rewriting history as to how, you know, the founding principles of America. Now, they believe in apocalyptic narrative. And ironically, many people do not know this, but the white supremacy people also do the same thing that Daesh was doing, ISIS was doing, which is they use neo-interpretation of scripture. So this is something I would like to share with my audiences, and that is that, you know, they are using Christian symbols. They are using the Bible. They are using parts of it to really justify their actions, to bring back Western Christianity, especially in Europe. That's a very big appeal in Europe, because they think that secular elites have taken over and have destroyed Western Christianity. So there are so many similarities, and we can study this. And only once we have the knowledge of and bring this to light will we be able to defend ourselves and to fight this this trend from spreading.
What would you like people to take away going forward, and not just members of the Muslim community, but, you know, other folks, because I know everybody is welcome to this event on Friday evening, particularly as we are seeing the rise of white nationalism?
You know, I want people to know, I know people in their hearts are fearful that this is happening in the land of the free. I mean, we've had 230,000 people who have died since 9/11. And it's senseless, innocent, you know, senseless violence, innocent people dying at the hands of individuals who are called lone wolves. But if you really study them, they're not lone wolves. They belong to a network. And this can stop at the home level. It can stop with a mother. It can stop with a father, a sibling, a friend. It does not have to get bigger. And that's why people say, well, they have mental issues. Yes, they have mental issues, and those have to be confronted. I think that it is possible for us to stop that, but if we all come together. First of all, different faith communities have to come together. People of conscience have to come together. You know, and we have to step together, and we have to make this knowledge actionable in our communities, and we have to confront it, And we have to be able to rehabilitate people who are on this path. And there are ways to do that. I'm working currently with a wonderful organization that exits out white supremacy people named Life After Hate. They're wonderful people. And if we share our information with them and they share our and their information with us, we see the corollaries between these groups. It is possible we can, you know, confront this ideology and bring it in the light of the day, because I think remaining silent, we will all pay a price.
Daisy Khan of the organization WISE, Women's Islamic Initiative in Spirituality and Equality, will lead a town hall meeting on knowledge to end extremism later today at the Islamic Center of Boulder. It starts at 5:30. All are welcome. And you can find out more about WISE at wisemuslimwomen.org. The time is 8:19. You're listening to your independent community radio station, KGNU. If there were a top 40 chart for special interest holidays, then coming in at number one on the countdown this week would certainly be Record Store Day. Saturday, April 13th will mark the 12th annual Record Store Day celebration. Perhaps you haven't heard of Record Store Day or RSD, but the folks at Bart's Record Store in Boulder know all about RSD and will be happy to share in the spirit of the holiday. Michael Velasco brings us this report.
What we got here? Oh, the Twin Peaks Season 2 soundtrack.
A few Bowie ones, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's more than just that.
Oh, yeah, and these Frank Blacks, those are killer.
Look at all the Grateful Dead that are coming out. That's
always. We are listening in on the staff of Bart's Record Shop in Boulder as they read a list of albums to be released on Record Store Day.
Oh, Hawkwind.
I think that's pre.
Is it?
No, it's with Lemmy, yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So Record Store Day is one of the biggest days of the year for record stores worldwide. There's all these awesome exclusive releases, some things that are going to be first released on Record Store Day, limited copies of things. It's one of those things where you line up early.
Record Store Day began as a grassroots campaign to strengthen and support independent record stores following the rise of download and streaming services. Corporate interest abandoned that market once physical products were no longer massively profitable. What remained were the independent shops that had deep roots serving the music-loving, record-digging community.
The service and the community aspect of it. That's what I love the most about owning this shop.
That's Will Paradise, owner of Bart's Record Shop.
Being passionate about the music, but is equally passionate about service and knowing our customers. I work in here 5 days a week. I know our customers by name. We will set records aside for people, text people pictures of records. Our customers, they're just not our customers, they're our friends. And so we try to create that environment, and it's contributed a lot to the growth of our sales. But, you know, if you're looking to make a lot of money owning a record store, you're in the wrong business.
In the case of record stores, the little guy has survived the sinking music market, thanks in part to the promotional coordination of Record Store Day, which encourages a little friendly unity of purpose among so many scattered shops.
The original intent was definitely to keep independent record stores alive.
That's Bart's record shop manager, Patrick Selvage. I've asked him about the impact of Record Store Day special releases and promotions.
For a lot of the independent record stores that are participating, it's the biggest day of the year. Our sales on that day, half of it is for specific Record Store Day releases, but the other half is totally non-related Record Store Day sales. So I feel that it is really doing what it set out to do in the first place, which is to support independent record stores.
On Saturday, April 13th, Bart's Record Shop in Boulder will celebrate Record Store Day in the spirit of music appreciation and record collecting with their community of customer supporters.
Yeah, there's definitely, I think, the bond with the community.
That's Zay Materik, the most recent addition to Bart's staff and a self-confessed child of the streaming era.
Each one of us has similar but also unique music interests, and we definitely support our local artists as well. So we're able to really just bring everybody together in Boulder through music, and I think that's a family thing. I think we create a family in this town, and it makes us feel really good to be right in the center of Boulder.
Record Store Day is not without its critics, though. The major labels have been accused of over-influence. Some say the records released are more for the benefit of collectors than listeners, and stores cannot return unsold units.
There are the lovers and the haters of Record Store Day. For some people, all they see is kind of a money grab by the labels. The haters of Record Store Day see it as like a flipper's day, you know, going in, buying these records, going back home and putting it on eBay for 10 times what you paid for it.
And while these are legitimate concerns, workarounds, gray areas, and abuses are always present at some level in commerce. So as not to throw baby out with the bathwater, Record Store Day's positive impact is perhaps rightly emphasized.
Anderson Paak, 12.
Oh, that Pink Floyd, Saucer Full of Secrets, mono, that's going to be good.
Yeah. Queen.
Oh, this live Prince?
Yeah.
That's going to be killer.
One customer who will certainly be celebrating is Lewis Karp. Decades before being a loyal Bart's customer, Lewis created one of the most well-known independent stores in the country, Waterloo Records in Austin, Texas.
My first month of Waterloo, we did $13,000 in business. By the time I sold it in 90, we were doing over $1 million a year. But it started just like Will's doing here. It was just one customer at a time, building that credibility, building those relationships. And this store, as it continues to grow and evolve, is going to become a bigger and bigger part of the musical community here in Boulder.
So what can we expect on April 13th?
A lot of stuff this year. Oh my God, the Cecil Taylor, that is gonna be killer. I was gonna get doubles of that one.
Robert Johnson.
And the first people usually get there at like 3 a.m., you know, they're camped out. By the time we open the doors, it's down the block around the corner, you know, and there's over 100 people in line. But after that initial rush, people just come in and they're enjoying browsing and they're having fun and they're really engaging with the records. It's more of a social thing.
It's definitely a different experience if you're just walking in on a normal day. We offer coffee and pastries and we have music playing and people are really excited for it. And it just gets bigger and bigger every year. It's almost like a party for us. So please do come out and experience that with us.
I think that's a 7-inch.
10-inch.
Yeah, last year too, they had the 10-inch one.
Cool key.
Van Morrison Astral Weeks. It's ultimate takes on that. It's a 10-inch.
They did the Moon Dance alternates last year.
Last year, but it was 12-inch. It was full on.
Wow. Astral Weeks on 10-inch this year.
And you are listening to KGNU. The Blind Cafe is an award-winning positive social impact event that invites people to come together, eat food, listen to music, and discuss issues like racism, all in complete darkness. It happens tonight and tomorrow at the Dairy Arts Center in Boulder, and it's the brainchild of Rosh. He told Maeve Conran that he was inspired to create the Blind Cafe after a visit to one in Reykjavik, Iceland.
It's kind of like jumping into cold water, that feeling like, you know, and then you got to relax your body and kind of sink into it. Dishes clanking everywhere. Everybody's chatting away to Icelandic. I can't see anything. Literally can't see anything.
That particular experience of being in the dark, and this isn't just dimmed lighting. As you said, this is complete pitch black. Your vision is completely gone. Why then did you decide to take that back here to the US and use this as something that you can create positive social change with?
Basically, the darkness, like 100% darkness, creates this environment where people can open up with more vulnerability and honesty. Whether they're sharing or listening to other people or experiencing music, they can fully let go and dance like nobody's watching. They can get down on the floor and bawl their eyes out in the middle of a crowd of 100 people. Nobody sees it. You can stand up in your chair and eat your dinner while the rest of your table is sitting down and nobody says anything. I had carried this story with me about going to Iceland and going in the dark there, and then I always thought, wow, wouldn't it be interesting to do a music experience in the dark where we could, could I let go as an artist with more vulnerability in the dark and perform with more like raw? And what would it be like for the audience as well? And then, you know, I went to Naropa, so what if we got everybody to have to, you know, break bread together and socialize, and, you know, would people, you know, learn what it's like to relate without knowing each other's skin color or age or background or what kind of hat or ponytail they're wearing.
Well, aside from that kind of very personal experience that people will have, but I know you're also trying to raise awareness about what it's like for people who are actually visually impaired all the time, because I know at that original experience you had in Reykjavik, the waiters themselves actually were blind. I mean, is that something you're also trying to create awareness of?
Well, one point is that the Blind Cafe experience and the Blind Cafe is bigger than blindness. Blind awareness is a big piece. And in our signature event, we have a conversation with the blind staff, legally blind staff, who are also artists and musicians, in the dark. And we learn about another person's experience about blindness, not from being in 100% darkness, but because that we can't really simulate what it's like to be blind. But over the years, we've had conversations around dismantling racism and discrimination.
And what is it about being in the dark that facilitates a place where you can actually have those conversations?
Well, in our particular situation, we make 100% darkness, not 99%, which is sets everybody up to have to relinquish control. So you can no longer really be in the future or the past. You have to be present in the dark. And whatever, however, how comfortable you are with being present with yourself in a situation where you don't know what to do, there's a lot of growth and opportunity to learn about yourself and how you relate to other people. So learning how to communicate without your visual cues, learning how to really let go and actually listen to music again without, you know, being distracted and thinking on your phone or whatever, all the lights. The darkness, it just, there's just something about the, it's like you're together in community. We create a positive vibe. We got positive social change, and we do that specifically. Like, we got dark chocolate, we got, you know, puppies, and we got, you know, live music and cool people, and we got these awesome laid back, like, you know, blind ambassadors, and we really just try to be vulnerable and open with people, and then that tends to like really trigger humanity in other people. So the more we can let go of our guards, which is, you know, we just have all the time when we're in a lighted setting or whatever, the more we can become more present and aware of ourselves and how we relate, whether it's relating to how we eat. We've had one woman wrote me an email after a blind cafe and said, it saved our marriage. And I was like, oh, that's a bold statement. You know, and she's like, well, my husband hadn't held my hand with that much presence in 15 years. And it re-sparked our marriage. Because in the dark, you want to hold your partner's hand.
Well, Bridget Law, what is that experience like then as a performer, as a musician to perform? Because you're also right in Pitch Black.
Well, this will be my first experience performing in the dark. I'm pretty excited. I've actually only been a patron at the Blind Cafe once. So this is all very new to me. But I'm a musician that works through ear. You know, I play by ear and I play with feeling. So I don't think it'll be too challenging for me. I often close my eyes when I play anyway and just really try to feel the vibrations. So that part, I'm actually really looking forward to. I think it's going to be really great. And I'm really drawn to this experience because I have been playing music in the light and normal settings and spectacular settings for quite a while now. And what I love about this isn't just sharing music. This goes so much further than just a musical interaction. And I'm very activated by that. I really enjoy that concept.
Bridget Law and Dango Rose of Elephant Revival will perform along with Rosh and the Blind Cafe Orchestra and Richie Flores at the Blind Cafe, Music and Dining in the Dark, happening tonight and tomorrow at the Dairy Arts Center. Now, again, we have two pairs of tickets to give away to either of the performances happening Saturday evening. There's one at 5:30 p.m. and one at 8 p.m. We ask that you are a KGNU listener member and haven't won anything in the last 30 days. We'll give those tickets away to the first two callers that call right after we start the Connections theme, coming up just a moment after a few brief announcements. The number to call when you hear that theme start is 303-449-4885. Again, that's 303-449-4885. And we ask that you call in just a moment when we start the Connections theme. That does it for The Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Lee Myers.